Hello, everybody, and welcome to Meditation 2.0, The Miracle of Direct Awakening. I'm Craig Hamilton, and I'm delighted to be with you for this extraordinary gathering of human beings. I know that quite a number of you have attended events with me before, so hello and welcome again. And I also know a number of you are meeting me today for the first time, quite a number, in fact. So I'm pleased to be connecting with you and welcoming you into this community of awakening. So I want to invite you to join me here at the beginning and just taking a few minutes to settle into this extraordinary moment with so many thousands of us convened from across the globe. I know many of us are here live and many will also be listening to this audio at a future time, but whichever one of those you are, it doesn't really matter because the field of consciousness isn't limited by time. In consciousness, we're all here together. So maybe let's just imagine ourselves all sitting here, putting our attention on the collective intention that's brought us together, on our shared aspiration for spiritual awakening, for discovering and expressing who we really are, living the life we were born to live. Just feel everybody here with you. Now, one of the inner postures that we take in the practice of direct awakening is what I like to call the presumption of enlightenment. So, in other words, instead of presuming that enlightenment is far away, we take the radical position that enlightened consciousness is not far away, but it's right here, right now. And we actively notice the presence of this consciousness as our own consciousness. So I want to invite you to just take a moment right now to just presume the presence of enlightenment. For just a moment, assume there's nothing in your way. There's no space, no time between you and the ultimate possibility for human existence. And let's all do that together. Let's presume our collective enlightenment. And just notice the quality of the space between us as we sit here. Resting in the awakened consciousness that is our own essential nature. That is who we have always been. As we go through our session, I want to invite you to just allow this spacious sense of connectedness, this luminous awakened awareness, to just remain with us. You don't have to focus intently on it. I'm going to be talking a lot. Probably better to focus on that, but just allow it to remain here in the background. Thank you. So I'm honored and humbled that so many of you made the choice to spend your time here with me today. I know there are always many things we could be doing with our time, and I appreciate you giving yours to me, to us. This is a very exciting and precious moment for me because I'm going to be sharing something with you that's very close to my heart. I'm here today to talk about what I feel is a radical new approach to meditation. And it's one that I've become convinced has a miraculous power to propel us directly into awakened consciousness, and in so doing, completely transform our experience of this life. Now, I realize that meditation came to us from the hallowed halls of the great ancient wisdom tradition, so I must acknowledge up front that it feels a little audacious to be taking the position that this is a new, more effective way of meditating. It's the kind of thing when you start saying it, you start looking overhead for a bolt of lightning to come down and take you out. So if I do get struck by lightning tomorrow, I guess we'll all know that I probably should have kept my mouth shut. But for now, here we go. And I'm sharing this because I feel it's important to share it at this time when so many of us are so committed to spiritual practice and awakening, and it's so critical for our human future that, frankly, a large number of us genuinely do awaken, that we get off the endless wheel of seeking for enlightenment and start finding it. So the way it's going to work is that I'll spend the first 75 minutes or so sharing about the practice of direct awakening, how I came to it, the core insights behind it, and how it works. Then after that 75 or so minutes, after we've gotten through it all, I'm going to take about 10 or 15 minutes at the very end to share about an upcoming program I've created to teach you this practice in a lot more depth. So I'll share a little bit about that. And I also just want to say that even though I'm going to share a lot of information today, this is fundamentally a transformational event. And I want to invite you to listen to it in a way that will allow you to be moved and transformed by it, which means to be tuning into this current of awakening that's here right now and allowing it to do its work on us, to open us up and give us a glimpse of how this practice works in our own experience. And toward that end, because it's an event about a new way of looking at spiritual practice and awakening, I thought it would be helpful if there were at least a few opportunities for you to get a taste of what I mean by the practice of direct awakening. So what I'm going to do is intersperse a few brief meditation experiments throughout the event. We had our first one already at the beginning, and hopefully some of you got a small taste of it then, and we'll have a few more. And the way to relate to these brief practice experiments that we'll do is very lightheartedly, to just give it a wholehearted try without second-guessing yourself or wondering if you're doing it right. The good news is that even though this is a very subtle process, it's also very simple and immediate, so it's possible to get a glimpse of it, even in a short time. And my hope is that everybody here will have at least some taste of what I'm pointing to today. So I'm aware that many of us here have been meditating for quite a long time, probably several decades. I'm sure others of us have just dabbled with it. But we've probably all heard by now that meditation is something that we should be doing as part of any healthy lifestyle. Right? It's all over the news. The science is finally backing us up on this and showing how meditation improves our health and our well-being across dozens of different life areas. And the meditation that I'm speaking about here is certainly going to do all of those things for you, but I also hope it's clear by now that this meditation I'm here to speak about has the potential to take us far beyond improved health and wellness. In fact, I'm honestly a bit ambivalent about whether I should even be calling this meditation, because at this point, most of us have so many associations with what meditation is that it can be a little hard to introduce something new into that. For most of us, meditation means something like silently repeating a mantra or sacred word, or following our breath, or labeling our thoughts and feelings, trying to become a witness of our mind. And those are all good things to do. In fact, those are all good preparatory practices for the practice I'm going to be introducing here. So if you've been doing them, that's great. But this practice is about something entirely different. It's a practice of directly recognizing our enlightened essence, or what I'm often referring to here as awakened awareness or awakened consciousness. So this is a process that was designed to enable us to directly access spiritually awakened consciousness and to unleash all of the extraordinary human capacities that come with that. Now, enlightenment's a big word. Awakening is a big word. And I'm going to speak more about what I mean by that in just a minute. But before I do, I want to ask you a question. And that question is, do you believe in enlightenment? Do you believe that an extraordinary spiritual transformation is possible? And more importantly, do you believe it's possible for you? The reason I'm asking is that this is the question that this entire approach is founded on. You see, if we believe in enlightenment, that means we believe in enlightenment right now. See, if we look at what all the world's great spiritual masters have said about enlightenment or spiritual awakening, although they might disagree about a lot of things, the one thing they all seem to agree about is that enlightenment is the discovery of who we already are. It's the discovery of our true nature. Spiritual awakening is about the radical realization that our true nature, that our essence, that who we really are, is not separate from the most unimaginably sacred thing in the universe. Enlightenment is the recognition that in our essence, we are this luminous, breathtaking, glorious, conscious awareness. That we are actually not these limited temporal creatures that we take ourselves to be. The essence of who and what we are is actually pure God stuff or Buddha stuff, that we're made of divinity. Or as the Mahayana Buddhists would say, we have Buddha nature. And when we're finally able to embrace who and what we really are, we become a living expression of this miraculous dimension of being. Our cosmic essence, our super nature, is now free to express itself in this world because we've made room for it, because we've embraced it and allowed it to come forth. That's what I'm pointing to when I talk about spiritual awakening. Now, there's another thing the great traditions seem to agree on when it comes to awakening. They seem to agree that when any human being takes the leap of embracing and accepting their own enlightened nature, that person is transformed into a kind of super being. Now, I know we don't hear so much about this today. When we look at the spiritual books and teachings filling the spiritual marketplace of the 21st century, we tend to hear more about things like just accepting things as they are, allowing our ordinary self to, you know, being okay with our ordinariness and our human foibles, and maybe learning how to be centered and relaxed and calmer in the face of challenges. Living in the moment, just being in the moment. But if you look back at all the great wisdom traditions, at their enlightenment teachings, their teachings about spiritual awakening and what happens to a person who awakens, they told a very different story. In fact, they all tended to characterize the awakened master, the realized one, as what today, the only analogy we would have today would be a superhero, someone who had superpowers. Seriously, if you look in the traditions, the notions of the awakened one, they could read minds, fly through the air, appear in two places at once, heal at a distance, move objects with their mind, walk through walls. You find all of this in many, if not most, if not all of the traditions. The idea of the awakened, enlightened one was like kind of like all of the X-Men combined, if you follow superhero movies, but also with a highly evolved moral center and fortunately, boundless spiritual wisdom and compassion. This great love, this limitless love and tenderness and sensitivity. Now, I don't know whether the people who wrote these ancient texts actually believe in the superhero part, but it is nearly universal across the traditions. And I do want to acknowledge that some degree of genuine paranormal ability does seem to be increased with spiritual awakening. That's as far as I'm going to go on it. I don't think it's a main event. I don't think it happens all the time. I don't know how much of it's real. I think some degree of that is true. But my guess about these tall superhero tales from the great traditions is that they probably came into existence as a way to try to convey how extraordinary a thing it really is to awaken to our true nature. I think it was sort of a PR program for religion, so to speak. And I honestly don't mean that in a pejorative sense. Not like somebody sat down and said, hey, let's try to fool people. But I mean it in the sense that those who woke up and who began to understand what awakening was wanted to share it with people. They knew they had found the meaning of life. And this was before mass public education. So you have to realize most people that they were trying to convert weren't very developed in a lot of the ways that we take for granted today. They hadn't been through a dozen or 16 or 20 years of schooling and higher learning and psychotherapy and all the other development. So I think the masters realized that they were going to have a hard time conveying the subtlety of what's truly extraordinary about enlightenment. And so they probably gradually sort of amplified things a bit to get people's attention. But leaving those kinds of truly supernatural powers aside, what all the wisdom traditions also strongly and consistently point to is the truly profound nature of what happens to a person who awakens to and embraces their true nature. See, when we discover this already divine essence of who we are, we're unleashed from, it feels like we're unleashed from a prison, unlocked, let out. We discover this life of boundless inner freedom, of unassailable joy, of this overflowing fullness, this love that seems to have no end. But in addition to those, you know, clearly spiritual qualities and spiritual experiences, what is also true about this higher spiritual self is that it already contains, it inherently possesses most of the higher abilities and capacities that all of us today are working so hard to develop in ourselves one at a time. When we discover this superconscious self, if you will, we find that we have access to this remarkable wisdom faculty, this kind of intuitive knowing that enables us to instantly, faster than the speed of thought, discern powerful truths, see into the heart of a situation, spontaneously take effective actions, seemingly without any premeditation, sometimes without even our own awareness. We see after the fact what we did, what we knew and what we did. And we say, where did that come from? When we awaken to this, we find that we're filled with a dynamic source of energy that's seemingly limitless. Energy to do whatever needs to be done in each moment. It's not coming from our body anymore. It's coming from somewhere else. And we find we can tap into this well of creativity that also feels limitless. It's as though the creative power of the cosmos is coursing through us. Whenever we need it, it's there. And we find we have this access to a wellspring of inner strength that gives us steadiness and confidence in the face of life's challenges. It's like no matter what life throws our way, we're not daunted. We have a fundamental trust that we'll find our way, that the resources needed to meet the demand will show up from where we don't know, but we trust that they will, and we find that they do. I'm not talking about outside, you know, I'm not talking about we trust that God's going to take care of us or mystical things will happen in our life to make everything work. But there's a kind of trust in an inner resource that's seemingly limitless and available to us. And that's where the confidence comes from, and that's where our ability to act so freely and spontaneously and with so much strength and clarity of purpose all comes from. We also find an unprecedented ability to focus our attention, to be present in a way that most of us have never experienced. And we have rarely experienced other people being present to us in that way. It's one of the shocking things when you meet somebody who's very spiritually awakened. You know, they're present, they're here. Like more of them is here than 20 other people. They seem to have so much weight and consciousness. We feel held in it when we're in their presence. With this awakening, we also find that we have become unimaginably sensitive. We're like a finely tuned, receptive instrument that can sense into the deeper needs and feelings of those around us, of groups, of situations, but most importantly, to what we might call the evolutionary need of the moment, the evolutionary trajectory of the moment. We can feel it with our being. Now, I want to be careful. I'm not asserting that every single skill or capacity that we need to get through life is somehow contained in our spiritual supernature. I'm not saying that, you know, it makes you good at math, or good at spelling, or, you know, a perfect communicator, or, you know, any of the dozens of other things that we want to, you know, develop to function. But what I will say might be the most remarkable capacity that it does contain is what we might call evolvability or adaptability. In other words, this higher part of ourself is so fundamentally aligned with the impulse of evolution itself that it is not in any way resistant to change. It thrives on change. So it contains a kind of super learning ability, an ability to easily step into new potentials and abilities with fluidity and grace. So we become able to grow whatever capacities we need. Now I want to just pause for a second. What I'm saying makes sense, right? I mean, I'm not trying to assert that so you'll believe me, but I mean, doesn't it make sense that that's how life would be? Doesn't it make sense that that's what a human being would be? I mean, wouldn't that make sense? Let me put it another way. Wouldn't that make sense out of this whole thing? if we really were God stuff, if we really were these extraordinary beings with all of these extraordinary capacities, can you imagine the world we would live in if this was unlocked? If this was what people were, if this was how we were, it would all make sense. And it can make sense. And that's really the most remarkable and breathtaking thing about this, is that this enlightened consciousness is already our true nature. It's already our true self. It's not something we become. It's not something we grow into. When we discover this, one of the first things out of our mouth is, I mean, we say it in our own words, but it's something like, oh my God, how did I not see this before? This has always been who I am. This is so obvious. Where was I looking all this time that I didn't see this? It's one of the most universal dimensions of awakening, is the obviousness and the shock at having missed it for so long. I want to invite you into our second practice experiment. Just for a moment now, I want to invite you to let go of every idea of who you are, whoever you've taken yourself to be up to this point. Just for a moment, just let it go and just be as you are. Just be as you are. Which means just let yourself be exactly as you are, with no image of yourself. Just be here and be free. Just for a minute. Don't be concerned if you saw anything in that moment or not. These are just little peeks into the unknown. Brief moments of practice experimentation. We're just experimenting with our own consciousness. Some of you might have had a moment of freedom. Some of you didn't. Doesn't matter. I mean, ironically, I kind of want to support and sponsor the part of you that expects to be enlightened in a one-minute practice experiment. That's a good thing. It's aligned with the immediacy of this whole approach. The point is, it doesn't take any time to be who you already are. But I'm trying to balance that with another critical piece of this work, which is having infinite room for whatever our experience is at any given moment. Because awakened consciousness is not about having a special spiritual experience. It's not about having a certain kind of state of consciousness. And most of us are so, you know, spiritual practitioners tend to be so conditioned to be looking for extraordinary states, looking for spiritual bliss, luminous consciousness. Probably a lot of the words I just used to describe awakening, but what that is something that your mind can't grasp. You will never be able to conceptualize it. You'll never be able to hold on to it. You'll never be able to aim for it. You'll always only be able to open to it, to allow it, to make room for it. And fortunately, that's something that can be learned. That's really what I'm here to talk about. That is something that can be practiced. And it makes all the difference. It changes everything. Now, the challenge that I'm sure is coming up for many of us is that a lot of us have had experiences of this profound possibility. A lot of us have had spiritual awakenings at this point. Some of us have been meditating. I bet there are people at this event who've been meditating for 50 years. 60 years? Write in and tell me if you've been meditating more than 60 years. I want to feel proud of you. There's a lot of spiritual practice here. So we've had these experiences, but the trouble is that these awakenings tend to come and go. They burst forth and then they fade out. Also, for most of us, spiritual awakening tends to be something that happens spontaneously, unexpectedly. In fact, isn't it true, those of you who've had spirit experiences of awakening, that it's usually not something that we feel we've played any part in creating? Meaning, spiritual awakening is not typically something that we bring about directly through spiritual practice. I'm sure very few of you who would nod to, yes, I've had experiences of awakening, would say, oh, and they happened when I was meditating or doing some practice or chanting, praying. I mean, I'm sure we have positive experiences doing those things. We would probably say, yes, I have positive experiences of my spiritual practice. I feel calmer, more centered, more easeful, more connected to something bigger. You know, we would, a lot of more love, more openness. I'm sure a lot of things we would say that are good about our practice. I'm not disrespecting all of the spiritual practice we've done. I'm just pointing out that in most cases, awakening is not a direct result of practice. In fact, in many cases, it's the other way around. We have some moment of spiritual awakening, and after that, we go looking for how we could possibly get back to it, or how we go, wow, what was that? How am I going to get to that? And we learn about spiritual practices, and we start doing them in the hope that they're going to reawaken that depth. But over time, we find that the practices we're doing don't seem to directly connect with what we've experienced in those most sacred, precious moments of awakening. Most of the time. I mean, I'm sure a bunch of you will go, well, no, I had this amazing meditation experience. Good. I mean, you should. With all the meditation we've done, we should have some amazing meditation experiences. I've had amazing meditation experiences too. But I'm making a more general point. In fact, I have a very interesting story, actually, that relates to this. Now, as some of you know, when I was back in my 30s, I spent about 8 years as the editor of a magazine called What is Enlightenment? Unfortunately, like many magazines of that era, it's no longer around, hasn't been for probably almost a decade. But back in the 90s, in the early 2000s, this magazine represented a very vital spiritual inquiry into this question of what enlightenment means in our time, how spirituality is evolving in the modern age. And as part of that job, that incredibly cool, interesting, fun job, I was able to travel all over the world, meeting spiritual luminaries of all the great traditions, as well as teachers that operated outside of traditions. I went to India probably half a dozen times. I went to Mount Athos in Greece to meet the Orthodox, you know, the mystical Orthodox elders of Christianity. I traveled in Nepal. I traveled in Thailand, all over Europe, the States. Got around. Didn't see the whole world, but along the way, at one point, I came across a book by a non-traditional spiritual teacher. In other words, somebody who was not operating within a tradition, like me. I'm not within a tradition. I'm a non-traditional contemporary teacher. So I came across this book by this teacher who had clearly had a very deep experience of spiritual awakening. He had written several beautiful, articulate, poetic chapters about the immediacy and power of awakened consciousness, about everything I was speaking about a few minutes ago. And it was clear from the writing that this was from his own direct experience. It was just a spontaneous expression of awakening that he put to the page. So, because I had had similar experiences of awakening and was in this inquiry into awakening in our time, I went to visit this teacher when I was in his area for another event at some point. Wrote him and said, hey, we should get together. Want to hear about your experience, compare notes, that kind of thing. Now, the interesting thing about his book was that he had broken it into two completely unrelated parts. The first half of the book was all about his experience of awakening, as I described. But the second half was essentially a guide to doing Vipassana meditation, which, for those of you who don't know, it's a popular, probably the most popular form of Buddhist meditation to make inroads into the West. It's really the roots of the whole mindfulness movement, come out of the Vipassana movement, mostly. Some out of Zen. I'm sure some contemporary Buddhist scholars might try to correct me, so I'm going to cover my bases there. But broadly speaking, Vipassana's had the most influence. So here was this book where half of it's powerful transmission of awakened consciousness, and half of it is meditation instructions for this Buddhist technique. And when I read the book, the most notable thing about it was that the meditation section didn't seem to be at all related to the section on awakening. It was like two different books. Totally different things, seemingly by two different authors, I would even say. So when I met with him, and he was nice enough to invite me to come stay at his home by the sea, and we spent a couple days together. And in our first conversation, because I don't tend to waste time, I asked him about this apparent disconnect So what's the deal? You know, this first part's shining, shimmering with awakening. The second part is meditation instructions that don't really seem related. You know what he said? He said, well, funny you should ask. The awakening that inspired the first half of the book happened completely spontaneously. He said, it just came over me one day. And I found myself in this extraordinary liberated consciousness. I wasn't doing anything. I wasn't meditating. Just whoosh. And he said, and this experience of awakening that was just the most extraordinary thing of my life. He said, it lasted for about 3 days. And during that 3 days, I was just so on fire with the significance of what I was realizing, the immediacy, the obviousness, the miraculousness. He said that I wrote those chapters during those 3 days while I was having that experience. And then he said, the experience faded. And he had written all this down. And he said, then I thought, this book's kind of incomplete because it doesn't teach people how to do this for themselves. How do I teach this? And I couldn't really see any way to do it. But you know, Craig, in the past, I had attended a Vipassana meditation retreat. So I knew about this meditation technique and I had practiced it on my own some, studied it. So I decided to write the second half of the book to teach the meditation in the hope that that might help people have an experience of awakening. Now I said, well, but you don't think it really had anything to do with your experience of awakening. You don't, there was no connection in your, he said, oh no. But what was I going to do? Just tell people about my experience? So anyway, I hope you get the point I'm trying to make. It's actually a perfect illustration of the issue that I'm trying to address with the practice of direct awakening. Over here, we have these huge traditions of meditation practice. And then over here, on the other hand, we have the reality of spiritual awakening. And frankly, even in the traditions, it's fairly commonly known that spiritual practice does not generally directly cause awakening. In fact, there's a fairly, you know, popular quote by a contemporary Zen teacher named Baker Roshi that really captures this sentiment. He's known for having said this. What he said, when asked, you know, he was asked, hey, what's the relationship between spiritual practice and awakening? Spiritual practice doesn't seem to cause awakening. He said, enlightenment is an accident, but spiritual practice can make you accident prone. It's clever, right? Clever idea. Spiritual practice makes us accident prone. And I think this idea makes sense given the context in which most people are doing spiritual practice and given the types of spiritual practices that are commonly taught, the kinds of things I spoke about earlier. Because these kinds of practices are not directly related to awakening, you know, the repeating sacred words, breathing techniques, following our breath, labeling our thoughts and feelings, cultivating the witness, cultivating mindfulness. They're not directly related to that awakened consciousness I spoke about. Then it makes sense to look at them as things that might make you more accident prone, things that might make it more likely that you could, what, have a spontaneous experience of awakening that's probably not directly caused by the practice. So what I'm saying is in the traditional paradigm of spiritual practice that we've inherited, becoming accident prone is really all we could hope for. It makes sense. But what if spiritual awakening wasn't just an accident? What if enlightenment was in fact just a higher, more evolved way of being human that could be directly practiced with conscious intention? That's the question I started asking, and a group of us started asking very intently after looking at all of this for a long time. After not being content with just becoming more accident prone and just teaching people to become more accident prone. And the result of that inquiry is what led to this discovery of the potential to practice awakening directly. Now, I know I'm taking down some sacred cows here. So I just want to acknowledge the traditions have been at this a long time, and questioning traditional wisdom isn't something we should do lightly. And I don't honestly feel it's something I've ever done lightly. But I do want to point out that we have to remember, essentially, all of the traditional mystical wisdom that we've inherited arose a long time ago. I think it's hard for most of us moderns to really imagine what life was like back, you know, thousands of years ago, before the Western Enlightenment, before the advent of the scientific worldview. You see, as modernists and postmodernists, meaning all of us here, we have a natural orientation to life that is, we're curious how things work. We wonder what causes what. We have a tendency to look for causality, to test things. We assume, hey, we can figure out how things work. You have to realize that's a relatively new emergence on our human evolutionary journey. That's the birth of the modern worldview, of the scientific worldview, of the Western Enlightenment, which is really just a few hundred years old. Prior to the Western Enlightenment, by and large, humans lived in a kind of demon-haunted world of superstition and magical thinking. It was not commonly assumed that you could observe and discern natural laws and gradually gain a better understanding of how things work and an ability to predict and influence outcomes. Things just sort of happened, and you wondered what the gods were up to. Maybe tried to influence them by sacrificing some people or, you know, doing a rain dance. And I don't want to, you know, now I'm sure I just defended every indigenous wisdom. I don't want to do that. We have to embrace all of the ways human beings have tried to make meaning out of their experience and just realize it's all evolving. We're moving forward. And that's really the point I'm trying to make. We are moving forward. It makes sense that now, thousands of years since really the birth of meditation and the discovery of enlightenment, some of us are beginning to say, to approach this whole matter of awakening and enlightenment with a kind of scientific mindset. To say, what is enlightenment anyway? What is this thing called enlightened consciousness? Maybe it doesn't have to be a mystery that we just can, you know, become accident prone and hope grace happens to us. What is this thing? How does it work? What are its qualities? How might we engineer a way to access it directly? So I'm talking here about having a scientific or experimental orientation to the spiritual path, which I think it's a pretty new idea. And really the context for the inquiry that gave birth to the practice of direct awakening was a series of what I like to call evolutionary laboratories that I had the good fortune to participate in. Now, when I talk about a meditation laboratory or an evolutionary laboratory, I don't mean people in lab coats. I mean, there are those now, right? People are putting electrodes on people's brains and having them meditate and looking at what happens to the brain. And that's one kind of meditation laboratory. But What I'm referring to are, it's a place where intelligent, competent, highly educated people are coming together with profound spiritual aspiration and spending thousands of hours doing spiritual practice and experimenting with it and seeing what causes awakening. Now, people sometimes ask me, you know, how much meditation have you done, Craig? So I actually counted it up the other day. For the first time, I never have, but I said, okay, I'm sure people are going to wonder. So it came out to about 17,000 hours of meditation practice, which is roughly 2 years of my life so far. I don't know what percentage of my life that is. I'll have to do the math at some point. I'm not that great at math, but I did count right. Now, that 17,000 hours includes, you know, a lot of daily practice, but also several intensive meditation retreats, the longest of which was exactly 6 months long, actually, where I essentially meditated all day long and often all night long. Now, I'm not bringing that up to try to intimidate you or insinuate that you need to meditate that many hours. In fact, here I'm making quite the opposite point. I'm making the point that you don't have to do your 17,000 hours of meditation. That, you know, a lot of that was experimentation and trial and error. And if I knew then what I knew now, I could have cut that number down by multiples, exponential. But I'm bringing it up because I know I'm saying some provocative and some potentially very controversial things. So I just want you to understand that all of this that I'm speaking about comes from a very committed and deep practice and inquiry. Now, there's one other thing I just want to say, a little aside, about why this experimental orientation to meditation is quite unique. Because it's not, I mean, it's kind of, you know, if you step back, it's kind of surprising there isn't more of this happening. I mean, again, people are doing studies on the brains of traditional meditators. That's almost the qualification to go and be in a laboratory to have them study your brain while you meditate, is that you're a Tibetan monk or some kind of a monk from a tradition. Why? Because the assumption is, well, the traditions know about spirituality. They know about enlightenment. They know about meditation. So that's who we're studying. Now, the point I'm trying to make here is that I think the reason this scientific or experimental, this kind of how does it work orientation to meditation is actually not very common is that meditation came to us from the ancients. It's held as a kind of sacred cow that shouldn't be tampered with. You might see this in your own experience. There's a kind of a fear that, well, if we mess with it at all, if we change it at all, we're going to lose the sacred essence that was handed down from the great masters of old. And I think many people that I've met are afraid to deviate at all from the traditional practices. And it's, I think, for two reasons. I think it's partially, it's out of respect and reverence. We bow down to the wisdom, to those who came before. But I also think it's because a lot of us, we feel like we Westerners, we moderns, we don't really know about spirituality. Maybe we can't quite know. So we feel more confident going back to ancient traditions where people are wearing robes and they seem to have the authority of the tradition. They have colorful deities to bow down to. You can have Buddha statues around. Gives us a feeling of the sacred and connects us with our spiritual heritage. And I think for all those reasons, we're a little afraid to tinker with it. And by the way, I'm nothing against sacred art. In fact, I have all manner of little deity statues around me right now as I'm speaking to you. My wife likes to collect goddess statues. So I've got hers here. I've got a Buddha statue. I have a Shiva statue. So again, there is no disrespect for the traditions here. But I'm just saying we're all kind of afraid to mess with the old wisdom. And I'll just give you a really concrete example. Many people today still think that if you're going to meditate, it's better to sit on the floor with your legs crossed in a lot of pain. Anybody recognize that? So why is that? Why do we think that meditation should happen sitting on the floor with your legs crossed, probably with knee pain? It's because meditation was invented in the jungle at a time and place when the only place you could sit was on the ground, pretty much. So people, you know, it's not like chairs were widely available where the early meditation emerged. People sat cross-legged for everything, pretty much, eating, working, meditating. And it was an easy way to congregate and sit. You didn't have to provide seating. Everybody could just sit. So that became how meditation's done. So I think we should add that to our list of things we could potentially evolve beyond. A sacred cow we could potentially let go of. And I'm sure many of you have. I'm not the first person to say, hey, you don't have to sit on the floor to be able to meditate. I think the bigger point, and I'm sorry for the asides, I hope you're staying with me. I think the bigger point I want to make is that these sorts of evolutionary laboratories that I've participated in, they're places where people who are deeply reverent of the traditions come together, but with a willingness to question everything, to go somewhere new, to take nothing for granted. And in that scientific experimental spirit, really try to crack the code of awakening and how to practice awakening. And ultimately, in my case, how to teach awakening, because that's what I'm most interested in. How do I share this? How do I not just give people techniques that might make them accident prone? It's a very dissatisfying approach as a teacher. So it was in one of these laboratory environments that the breakthrough that I'm speaking about happened. Now, if you follow the world of technology at all, you may have at some point come across the term reverse engineering. Anybody heard that term, reverse engineering? What's reverse engineering? It's how the technology companies figure out what the competition is doing so they can pick up on the innovations. So for instance, Apple, I think, invented the first smartphone, right? The iPhone. What do you think all the other technology companies did? They bought one. And then they got their best engineers to take it apart, to disassemble it and study every little part of it and figure out how it works. This has also happened a lot in the military, in the arms race, the attempt to stay powerful. You know, the countries are always trying to get their hands on the advanced weapons of the other side. They hope that a missile falls out of the sky and doesn't explode so they can get it into their laboratory, take it apart, see how it works, and try to reverse engineer it, meaning learn how it's done so you can make another one. This notion of reverse engineering is actually a very good analogy for the process that gave birth to the practice of direct awakening. Because essentially what we did was, you know, in the context of all the practice and all the experimentation, you can imagine a lot of spiritual awakening was happening. You know, I began to have profound experiences of spiritual awakening, profound openings that would last quite some time, a couple decades ago. And so did many of the people I was working with. And we began to look at it and say, what is spiritual awakening? What is this thing called enlightenment? How does it work? How can we make it work better? Does it have to be just a mysterious thing that happens by accident? Or could we actually start to reverse engineer awakened consciousness? So what does that mean? Well, awakened consciousness it's a very specific event. It's a very particular kind of consciousness. And what I mean by that is that just like our unawakened or ordinary consciousness shows up in very predictable ways, everybody's kind of the same when they're not awake. So does awakened consciousness. When I wake up to enlightened awareness or awakened awareness, when I discover my true nature, what I'm discovering is the exact same thing you discover when you discover awakened consciousness, when you awaken to your true nature. It's one thing. And it is made up. I mean, I don't want to reduce it because I think you can feel my reverence for what it represents, but it's something that can be broken down into its component parts. In other words, you can, you know, when you have an experience of awakened consciousness, you can begin to look at it and say, wow, how is my consciousness different right now? How is that? What is it about this consciousness that's so extraordinary? How does it function? How does the awakened human being relate to life? How do they interact with the world? How does this consciousness operate? For example, we began to observe that awakened consciousness is easeful. When we are awake to our true nature, we have discovered the ultimate contentment. There is a place in which we are so fundamentally at ease with all of reality that there is nothing that could happen that could touch that. It doesn't mean we're happy with every little thing that happens. The world might bother us in all kinds of particular ways. There might be all kinds of things for good reason that we want to change. But on a fundamental existential level, we've come home. We've found the ultimate contentment. We are so deeply at ease. Our whole being is existentially at ease. Now, the question we asked was, how could we practice being utterly at ease? What kind of meditation practice or spiritual practice could we undertake that would literally be the practice of that easefulness? How could we practice letting go of any and all tension on the deepest level of our being right now? Could we practice that? Yes, we could. Yes, we can. We also observed that awakened consciousness it's incredibly present. It's why it's called awake, you know, awake, present, attentive, fully here, undistracted. How might we practice being fully present? Could we practice that? Could we make a meditative or contemplative practice out of showing up completely for the moment as it arises with our whole being? Yes, that's something you can practice directly. We also observe that awakened consciousness has an extraordinary innocence to it. It is this, it's what's been called, what Suzuki Roshi called a beginner's mind. We experience everything as if for the first time. The world is ever new. We're not imposing pre-existing knowledge on the moment. We're here, innocently open, receptive to what is arising. The question we asked is, how could we practice innocence, not knowing? That's something we can practice directly right now. We can turn that into a meditation practice, letting go of every idea, holding on to no fixed beliefs and concepts, being here, wide open and innocent. We also observe that awakened consciousness is non-grasping. It's a kind of Buddhist term, not grasping. It doesn't cling on. Awakened consciousness is not trying to, you know, the human condition is grasping toward pleasure and resisting displeasure or pain. That was one of the key Buddhist insights. There's just aversion and craving, and that dominates the unenlightened human experience. Awakened consciousness is non-resistant and non-grasping. It doesn't want or need anything. It's already so whole and complete. We realize we are so full and whole and complete that we want nothing from this world. We don't need anything. It couldn't be more full. Life couldn't be more whole. So we don't grasp. Could we turn that into a practice? Absolutely, it's a practice. It's something that we can take into meditation and we can practice, not grasping at anything and not resisting anything. It's a very powerful meditation practice. It's a very accessible one, actually. In fact, let's do our third experiment right now. I just want to invite you for this moment to not grasp at anything and not push anything away. And by anything, I mean anything in your experience. Just let your experience be exactly as it is. No need for it to be any different. Just allow everything to be right now. It's something you can do. It's something you can practice. We also observe that spiritual awakening is, awakened consciousness is expansive. It's limitless. There's no boundaries in it. No fixed reference points. It's everywhere at once. Could we make a practice of not limiting anything? Of just allowing that expansiveness to be? Being expansive, yes, we can. So the point is, that once you have an experiential understanding of what awakened consciousness is and how it operates, you can break it down into its component parts and you can begin to practice them. I just went through, I don't know, maybe half a dozen there, which is kind of going through some spontaneously. We could identify another half a dozen and another half a dozen different ways of understanding this awakened consciousness and to turn those into practices. And practice them. They're like the sort of natural inner postures, the inner position of awakened awareness, the inner disposition or orientation or way of relating to things, the inner qualities. And the extraordinary thing about these inner postures, as I sometimes like to call them, is that you don't have to practice them all at once. Like, you know, I'm not going to sit you down and say, okay, it's really easy. You just have to do these 10 things at once. It's not like that. The miracle of the practice of direct awakening is that if you fully practice any one of these postures, the other ones all come online at the same time, automatically. I know some of my students who I've taught some of this to are nodding their heads. They're going, it's so true. I do one practice and boom, suddenly it's all happening. Why is that? It's because awakened consciousness is one thing. It's a real type of consciousness. So, you know, you practice one part and the rest just, it's like reality realigns around that. It's a subtle thing. I mean, you know, again, it If I just wrote it down and said, go do this, you probably might have a hard time really getting it. You know, I know it's people find it much easier to access when they're being guided through it, which is why that's ultimately how I teach it, is I guide people through it until I should keep showing them how to do it inwardly until they can do it themselves, because they've really, it's like I'm walking through your consciousness, kind of showing you, you know, pay attention to this, don't pay attention to that, let go of this, etc. So we learn it very directly. It is a subtle thing. It's kind of like, it's a little bit like, do any of you ever have flying dreams? Dreams where you fly around? And the interesting thing about flying in your dream, you know, flying, let's just say, is that it's not something that is like other things you do with an act of will. At least in my dreams, I can't sort of go, I am now going to fly, and I sort of effortfully fly. It's almost like there's a kind of energetic of flying that I have to make room for. I have to kind of, there's a kind of not doing in it. I'm bringing it up because it's almost a perfect analogy for the practice of direct awakening. We're kind of learning to fly. And you can't do it in the way you've done everything else in your life. And that really brings us back to this core point about enlightenment and why the traditions have said, well, you can't cause enlightenment with spiritual practice. You know, it's only you can become accident prone. It's not because it isn't something you can do through conventional, through your ego can't do it. Your conventional mind and your conventional will, none of that really has any effect on this. And so many people assume you can't do it. It's not, you can't just go and be awake. You can't just go and practice awakening. Yes, you can. Yes, you can. If there's one thing you got out of tonight, I just want you to understand that you can. And the fact that this is something that's come forth now so clearly in a scientific age where people are willing to question everything and experiment doesn't mean it's any less valid. I would say it means it's more valid because it's really time-tested and it really has been brought forward by rigor. But that said, there's one more thing I have to tell you. So, you know, I spoke earlier about how traditional meditation practices don't tend to lead to awakening. And specifically, I'm referring to the popular meditation practices that have been imported to the West from the Eastern traditions that we see all the time. But there's another interesting wrinkle to this. Because you see, as I've brought these practices forth, again, not in a big public way like this, but I've gradually been teaching them in more of my programs. I've led meditation retreats with pretty large groups of people coming for a week and meditating together. And, you know, this has gotten out there a bit, and naturally I've come into contact with other practitioners and teachers, traditional and contemporary, and I had a series of encounters with meditation masters from some of the big traditions, where I learned something very interesting. So, in at least some of these great traditions, there were these kind of esoteric or mystical schools whose teachings were never propagated to the masses. They were never widely taught, in most cases never written down. They were passed along orally from teacher to student, at least according to the lamas and teachers that I spoke with. And it was believed that these practices that they taught were too subtle for most meditators, most practitioners, and as such, they were not appropriate for mass transmission, mass communication. And I asked them, well, what was being taught in these mysterious, esoteric, kind of hidden schools? And guess what I discovered? these schools were teaching direct awakening practices. Very much like the practices that we do in our programs. Not identical, not maybe developed in the same ways, you know, still embedded in a lot of the traditional mythology and lore and deity worship and all the different complexities. But the essence of direct awakening practice is something that, although it didn't, you know, it was never widely known, it was in there, in at least in some of the traditions. And I have to tell you, as someone who is out on a limb pioneering new spiritual paths and practices, it's quite a relief when you discover something like that. You know, because sometimes when you're breaking new ground, you kind of wonder, well, wow, if this direct awakening thing was really true, wouldn't someone have discovered this and written about it at some point? Am I really discovering the spiritual secret of the ages, or am I just crazy or arrogant? So there you have it. So it's in there. I don't know that you can find it, but it's there. It was there, supposedly. So I've been told. I'm going to take their word for it. So you might wonder, having heard that, if these teachings, you know, traditionally were seen as so advanced or subtle or esoteric that they were kept a secret, what makes me think it's okay to teach them on a large scale today? What's changed? Believe me, it's something they made me think about. Some of them were kind of frowning a little. What are you doing teaching this stuff? Pearls before swine, that kind of thing. But you know what my answer to that is? I think a lot has changed since those ancient times. The world has changed. Human beings have changed immeasurably over time. You know, and I will say one of the monks I was speaking with about this actually validated this point of view. He said, you know, in ancient times, most of the people entering the monasteries weren't very educated. They weren't very sophisticated. They were kind of coming to the monasteries for schooling and stuff. And they lacked a lot of the cognitive, intellectual, emotional, psychological development that, frankly, most of us take for granted who are seeking enlightenment today. So he felt that too. And so I just want to say my experience has been that by and large, we're ready for these direct practices. We don't need to do our 100,000 prostrations and our thousands of mala prayers and years of visualizations and mantras and energy practices all to get prepared for awakening. We don't have to. With a committed practice and a good dose of training in the practice, this is something that we can do, you can do. You can access awakened consciousness directly. It is who you are. It's not something you grow into. It's something you finally decide you're going to make room for and allow. Now, I've been, as I said, teaching this in various contexts and smaller circles and various programs for quite a number of years and developing it. But the thing that convinced me to go public like I am today was actually something that happened last year. And this is the last story I'm going to tell. So last year, I was invited to lead a meditation for a private gathering of a little over 100 of some of today's most popular transformational teachers. So this is it's a private kind of networking conference made up of people whose books we've all read, names we all know, many of the top-selling spiritual authors were there, probably most of them. And some of them knew my work, and one of them got me invited to lead everybody in meditation. Now, they only gave me 15 minutes for it, which, you know, in general meditation terms is fairly short. But I thought, okay, let's see what happens. So I went there, and I led them in a very brief practice of direct awakening. I just dove straight in. Said, let's see, maybe I can take everybody there in a short time. And what happened was astonishing, frankly. I mean, the field in the room got so intense, and afterward I had literally dozens of these luminaries, whose names I know, come up to me and tell me that this was the deepest meditation. Some said it was the deepest spiritual experience that they had ever had. And I turned to my wife and I said, wow. Okay, if this has the, you know, these are people who are teaching everybody else about all this stuff. And if this is having that kind of effect, I've got to bring it out. Now, the interesting thing was, so I started working on this, but then that group invited me back again to lead another meditation. Sure enough, it was another 15 minutes, and I led a totally different practice of direct awakening. And the same thing happened. All day, everybody came up to me. It was like, oh my God, what happened in that 15 minutes? So, you know, I just have come to a point where I can't keep this a secret anymore. I feel it's time. And I think the overwhelming response that we've had to this event is a confirmation of that. You know, I realized, okay, this is the moment. So I told you at the beginning that I would share a little bit about a course that I've created to teach you this practice. This isn't something you can just pick up from a book. And if you're interested in learning more about this and finding out, you can learn about it at directawakening.com. Directawakening.com. If you're listening to the webcast, there's a link on the webcast page that says something like learn more about this here. You can click on that link and it'll take you to the webpage, a really online brochure that describes the program. But I want to say I've honestly never been this excited about a course I've offered. This is the distillation of all my experience teaching and practicing meditation over all these years. And, you know, I mean, I've led many retreats. I've guided people through hundreds of hours of meditations, thousands of people. But this is the first time I put together a comprehensive course to teach this practice of direct awakening. It's a 12-week course, and it's very intensive. I mean, I don't want to, you know, we all have busy lives. When I say it's very intensive, there's a lot that I'm going to give you in the 12 weeks. We're going to have a session where I'm going to directly teach one of the approaches to direct awakening, guide you into that approach directly, guide it some more, really, you know, draw everybody into it so we all get the experience of how to do it. Then each week I have another 90-minute session where I'll do meditation coaching, just help clarify more and remove the obstacles to it, fully get how it works. I'm also going to offer 3 guided audio meditation practices each week that you can listen to throughout the week to reinforce that week's practice that we're learning, because each week's going to focus on a different practice of direct awakening. You know, it's a bunch of different ones. And we're going to give PDF transcripts of the course sessions that you can then study. I'm going to provide written practice guides for the week to give you things to do on your own and try. I mean, I wouldn't say it's like, going to consume your week or be 8 hours of your week or something, but it's for those who want to dive in, there's a lot to sink your teeth into. Now, it's natural when you're engaging in all of these practices and learning what is essentially a whole new way of approaching meditation, you're going to have questions come up. So I wanted to create an opportunity for you to ask me directly any questions you have throughout the course and receive really my direct coaching in your meditation practice. So in addition to all of the core curriculum components that I just mentioned, I'm going to also convene 4 live virtual meditation workshops where we'll come together and focus on integrating everything we're learning and experiencing throughout the course. I'll speak about how the various modules work together, how they reinforce each other, how we can integrate all of this learning into one holistic practice. And this will be an opportunity for you to bring me any questions you have about the course material and receive my coaching on your practice. And I'm also doing these workshops because I wanted to create opportunities for all of us to come together at one time and experience the power of the collective field that's generated when we do come together in practice and inquiry. So these 4 live virtual workshops will be held on Saturdays every few weeks throughout the course. And you can find the schedule for that on the course information page.
I want to just talk maybe a little more about kind of the deeper potential of this program, because, you know, it's really pulling together everything that I've learned over the last several decades into one comprehensive process. It's the first time I've ever taught meditation systematically. I'm going to, you know, initially we're going to build the foundation for meditation, because there are a number of things that we need as sort of like bedrock for the direct awakening practices. So we'll do a whole week where we're first just learning what awakened consciousness is and how it works and getting grounded in awakening directly. Then we're going to do a week where we're kind of building the field, learning about meditation posture, learning about the environment we need to meditate within, how to set that up, how to generate a powerful intention that is part of what carries us through our practice and takes us deep, and a number of other fundamentals, how to build concentration adequately for the practice, how to get over kind of inner self-criticism that gets in the way of the practice. So we'll go into all of that. Then we're going to start going into one after another of the core direct awakening practices. And then after we've done the core approaches to direct awakening, we're going to do a module where we talk about how we take it out of meditation and into life. Because there are also practices of direct awakening you can do throughout your day. Just like there are these inner postures of meditative direct awakening, there are these outer postures and practices you can do throughout the day to carry it forth. So we'll be doing that. So it's going to be a journey. It's really a journey like I've never taught before. And kind of beyond excited about it. I mean, honestly, I wish I could have taken a course like this about 20 years ago. You know, it's been a lot to learn and pull all this together. I don't regret anything about the journey, but I will say I feel like what this represents now is a quantum leap in spiritual practice and teaching, and it's something that is going to take people so far so quickly. I feel like based on the feedback I've got, I think by the end of this course, there's so many people who are going to say, oh my, you know, I don't know how that happened in 12 weeks. I've been practicing for decades and I never experienced anything like it. I'm sure that's going to happen. I'm not saying for everybody. A lot of these things, it depends on what you bring to it, how dedicated you are, but there aren't limitations on you. Whatever you think, you know, your aptitude for, because we all have our own story, my aptitude for spiritual awakening. I'm a good meditator. I'm very receptive. I'm a bad meditator. I can't do meditation. I have a busy mind. You know what? The practice of direct awakening doesn't require you to quiet your mind. Let that in. Awakening is your true nature. Your true nature is your true nature, no matter what you're thinking about, no matter what's going on in your head. Your awakened consciousness doesn't mean you don't have complex emotions or difficult feelings come up. Doesn't mean you don't have active mind, even a crazy mind or monkey mind sometimes. You can rest in your true nature. You can abide in awakened consciousness, even with all of that going on. That's what we're going to learn. Some people are astonished by that. They go, oh my God, I've been trying to quiet my mind for 30 years. And I realized I could wake up without doing that. My goal is to take you on a journey that you are never going to want to return from. You're going to go somewhere you never want to come back from. And you're going to learn how to stay there. And then from there, keep going. Which is really the final part of the course, how we're going to step into a perpetual journey of awakening, because awakening is not an end state that you just get to and then life gets kind of flat and boring. Awakening keeps going and it keeps opening and unfolding. We live in an evolutionary cosmos and we ultimately become participants in the evolutionary process at the highest level, the level of spirit and consciousness. And so we'll spend the final week on how to keep going, how to never get into a practice rut, how to stay open even as we get wiser and wiser and more enlightened, how to stay humble even when other people start coming up to you saying, whoa, what happened to you? And they start noticing your enlightenment. You know, it seems like we wouldn't, you know, if we're really waking up, that we wouldn't need that training. But it doesn't always work that way. I'm sure you've seen that. Spiritual teachers can become incredibly arrogant. It's kind of a confusing thing, but it happens. And not only is this course going to be an extraordinary experience for all of us, it's going to give you the tools that you need to continue your journey of awakening. In other words, you're going to have the audios of all 12 course sessions, 12 coaching sessions, all 33 guided meditation audios, plus the edited transcripts of all the sessions. And you're going to have that to draw upon for the rest of your life as long as it continues to be elevating and inspirational. And these are timeless practices. So I have a feeling people will be listening to these for decades to come. Finally, I really want to say I'm moved, deeply touched by how many of you showed up here. Thanks for giving your time and heart and attention to this. I really could feel your presence here. I felt the collective field was very strong at times. I hope you had a glimpse of what it is I'm teaching. But if you didn't, don't worry about it. We only did a few, you know, very short experiments in it, and there will be much deeper opportunities coming up. So thank you again. Blessings on your journey. If you decide to join us for the program, I look forward to meeting you on the path and being with you in it. Much love. Thanks again. Great to be with you. Bye-bye.